So let's do this. So what we're going to do is we're going to carry on learning. We're learning just the series in Sichos Mos. So again, Sichos Mos is Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. The Mashkiach was actually originally Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. Just a fascinating fact about Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. We'll learn facts about him all the time. But he was born in 1860. So really from the European generation. And is born in a place which is today's Belarus. Was schooled under the Gedolei Europe, you know, so his Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin was the Netziv, Rav Natzi Tzidu Itzi Yehuda Berlin, whose Svarim we have in every base medrash of ours, somewhere in that direction, the brown set over there on the left next to the Rabban, is the Netziv. So he was one of the Talmud. I mean, you can imagine, so he traveled through the European experience, and he came through at the other end with the baggage of Europe through Shanghai into Israel. So there's also a lot of the meeting of worlds in his ideas. So let's learn a little bit. The focus of today is going to be the question of, again, I want to just, rather than learning a piece, let's try to think about the concepts which are at stake. So the concept at stake today is nature versus nature. The difference between nature versus nature and how we form the opinions that we form. I did something very clever, which is I stapled the last page first. I guess that's sort of, you know, I do know people who like to only read books. If they start with the last page, it kills me. Right? I don't know, for those who grew up in the Harry Potter days, you know, the people who'd like ruin it about who dies at the end. But so that wasn't the intention. Let's start at the very beginning. We're not going to do the whole thing. I want to just do a few snippets. So we're focusing on Parshas Vayera. He gave this in the year Taf Shin Lamed Beis, right? So this is the second Machzor, this is the second system of Shirim that he gave that was recorded in the Sefer, and here's how he says it. He starts off with a simple question. Once again, we're relying heavily on Gemara and Midrash, where he says the following, Kach no ma'at mayim v'rachatsu regleichem. So he says, please take a little bit of water, and wash your feet. And he stood by them as they ate. What are we referring to? What situation are we in?
This is where the Malachim come to.
Right, so here is the beginning of Parshas Vayera. Avraham Avinu is recovering from his bris milah. He's waiting and wishing for guests. And he sees the angels coming. He says, please take some provisions. That's the pasuk. The Gemara tells us, because Avraham Avinu had provided three things, he was provided with three things. Because of the cream and the milk, his children got provisions of food in the desert, the manna. For the schar that he attended, he stood attending to his guests. He had the zechus of the clouds, sort of tending to them, surrounding them. And finally, b'schar yukach noma atmayim zochu lebe'era shel Miriam. Because he says a little bit of water should be taken, so he in turn got his children, Bnei Yisrael, were protected or given the water in the desert. Fascinating discussion. It should be noted, by the way, that the things that he didn't do directly, he was punished for as well. When he sent Yishmael to go shech the cows, it says that that was held as a demerit against him. Meaning every action and micro action is held in great gravity to Avraham Avinu. Fascinating. Okay, so that I'm sure that sounds pretty familiar. I'm sure we've heard this at some points in time. Here's the question: the Maharsha, who is one of the halachic decisors and agadic decisors on the Gemara, asks the following question. He questions, Korulei Be'era Shel Miriam. We know the well is called the well of Miriam. That donation was already given, right? You can't have two people donating the same thing, right? Mashmo Shebeschus Miriam hi. V'od Shebegmor Antanis, the Gemara Antanis tells us, Amru Shloisha Parnasim Tovim Amdul Yisrael, Elohim Moshe Aaron and Miriam, Gimu Matanos Tovas Nidla Yodom, Ve'elohim Be'era Aaron Man. We know that, in fact, in the Schus of Moshe, they had the man. In the schus of Aaron, they had the clouds, which is why they disappeared when he died. And the schus of Miriam, they had the well, which is why that disappeared when she died in Parshas Chukas, right? So who has the stake in this, right? Who has the plaque, right? It's the Be'er Shel Miriam, it's the Be'er Shel Avraham Avinu. You can't just append it to anybody who does a good action, right? That's the question.
Maybe he laid the foundation, and then they had to, it couldn't have happened without both of them.
Excellent, good. So as all good complex ideas are, nothing's linear. You know, meaning to say, real life is not linear. No relationships are linear. No real decision making in life, is linear. It's complex. So as you're pointing out, Jeremy, so that's exactly the direction he goes in. He has his thesis in the next paragraph, which goes into exactly your idea. Nira, Nevaris advarim api dugma mitivo shel olam. Here's the nature of the world. Ilan gadol tzomeach migarin katan. Let's say you take an apple seed. You put the apple seed into the ground. Ach hagarin levado lo yihayo yochol latzmiach es ha'ilan beli adama. So without the ground, without the soil and the minerals that allow it to grow, it would not go into anything. V'shnehem yachad zukukin l'mayim v'shemesh. They also need, sunlight, they need water. Right? There's a number of elements which go into the creation or the growing of a tree. V'rak b'itztarfus kulam yachad yeah, waiting for you. Perfect. You would need to have all of them. Yofel ha'atzmiach ha'zilan. V'cheinu b'inyanov. Hagarin ha'shoresh la'amud ha'anan. The real, we'll call it the DNA almost, of requiring the cloud comes from. Levi'eru l'man. Hoya ma'aseh ha'cheseh shel Avram Avinu. That was Avram Avinu's initial action. However, v'adayin hoya zokok l'shoresh zeh l'koach ha'matzmiach es ha'ilonos. Ha'be'er v'amud ha'anan v'aman v'koach zeh kiblu Yisrael m'moshe Aaron and Miriam. But to, you know, the next step, so here you have the seed, but a seed by itself can stay in a museum forever, right? But you need to actually put in the ground, you need the water, you need the sun. Those are the later on parts of the germination cycle of a seed. So that's his answer, which sounds logically very pleasing, as Jeremy said, which is great. But this isn't just an intellectual exercise. This is an exercise in real life. So let's think about what that actually means. Let's try to dig this idea a little deeper. He's telling you that when you look at a result, that it is not so easy to know what caused that result. Right? When I look at the Be'er, there's this miraculous well which follows the Bnei Yisrael around in the desert, it's all very nice to say, well, you know, maybe it was in the Schus of Miriam. But really, sometimes I have to dig deeper to find where else it came from. Right? It's a more complex rooting. Okay? That's the thesis. Now, let's find a few applications of this. We're going to do positive applications and negative applications. So when you dig deep, you can dig deep in lots of different ways. Here's how he's going to do it. Let's skip a paragraph for a second. Into the new sort of separated paragraph, he says, "Yosod ze'anu motzim b'kama makomot." There's a number of places we see this. Al ha'posuk v'yikach shem v'yefes es ha'simla. So we know that shem and yefes, immediately after Noach's cataclysmic experience of this world-destroying flood. He gets out there, first thing he does, plants a vineyard, and he drinks. We can't really blame somebody from seeing absolute chaotic destruction from sort of, you know, living a type of life and thinking, you know, the questions of why me the next time a storm cloud's coming, that you're thinking about what's going on. He lives in a very difficult space. But nonetheless, his son actually ends up either doing castrating him or using him, terrible things that Ham does to him, and the other two sons protect him. So Shem and Yefes come and protect their father. So the pasuk says, "Aikach Shem veYefes es hasimla." Amru Chazal, the Rashi quotes this Chazal, "Limed al Shem shenislamets b'mitzas Yosem veYefes." If you look at the way it's framed in the pasuk, who's the leader in protecting their father's honor and dignity is Shame, Vaikach Shame. And oh yeah, Yefes, you know, now that he sees that it's starting, you know, we all know these kind of leaders, you know, I'll lead right after you. Right? So Yefes is along with him. Right?
Shame was the oldest.
True. Leadership doesn't run in age order, as we know very well, right? So
the pasuk earlier lists him as Shame Kondi Yefes.
True, there's no question. But in the ultimately, who did the action? Shame was number one in this. Lakach zochu bonov l'talis shel tzitzis. So we say that because he had the, what called the wherewithal to think that his father needed to be covered within a garment, so Hashem says, well, when your children's children's children will wear garments, they'll wear tzitzis. Because I'll give you something special to append to your garments. The Mizrahi on the Chumash asks the following question. By the way, the Mizrahi, just a fun fact, Mizrahi is a pirush on what? Anybody know? The Mizrahi on Chumash. So you see it in the regular Mikros Gedolos. It's actually a pirush on
Rashi.
Right, right. The Mizrahi is a Pirush on Rashi, which is why he's commenting here, because this is Rashi he's commenting on. Okay, it's important. There's actually a Chumash called the Yud Aleph Pirushim al Rashi. It's the 11 Pirushim just on Rashi. We think that they're explaining the Torah, but actually, as another example, the Maharal is not commenting on the Torah. The Maharal, the Gur Aryeh, is commenting on Rashi. So it's just worthwhile. That's why you need to learn Rashi first. So he's questioning the questions, this assumption. He says, wait a second. We know from last week's parsha, we've just skipped two back to Noach. What about last week's parsha? Lech Lecha, it says, Nigmar and Chul, and the Gemara says, Damrin Hasam, it says in the Gemara, Bishar Sh'amar Avraham Avinu im Michut Va'ad Sroch Na'al. What does Avraham Avinu say? He says to the Melech Saddam, I'm not going to take anything from you, not from straps to strings, right? I don't want nothing from you, right? Zochu bonav l'chut shel tcheles. So the Gemara says, because he denied taking even a string from him, so Hashem says, well, I'll give you strings, right? And that's when the tassels we attach to our garments. So again, the Mizrahi is saying the same thing. Well, who put the donation plaque up? So he says, v'nireh ein bozeh kol stira devadai ma'aseh ma'aseyu shel shem hoya garin. So like you're saying, Jeremy, the seed of the schus was shame, shemimeno nivta mitzvah tzitzis levonav, ach ha-ma'aseh shel Avraham Avinu hayom ha-mashlim va'akoach ha-matzmiach. Avraham Avinu germinated the process further to get the schus. Because if you think about it for a moment, let's just be fair now. Shame had a lot of children. In fact, he had 1/3 of all of Earth's population, to be fair about that, right? I don't know how the growth rates of each of the three sons, but, you know, 1/3 of all of Earth's population are Semites. They come from shame, right? But not all of the Semites got the tzitzis, right? Only the Abrahamic monotheism got it, right? So that means to say that although the seed was there, not everybody was watering the seed, right? Just to play out, there's consequences. So kind of the potential lay in wait, and ultimately it depended on who did it. So we're thinking about a little bit over here, like the nature and the nurture for a moment. What he's saying is maybe in the genes of, or in the historical genes of shame, there's this potential of greatness of tzitzis, but somebody has to water the pot plant. Otherwise, they ain't getting it. And Avraham Avinu is the only one who really sort of pulled that next trigger to get to the next step. Just historical point. Now, let's flip it the other way around. So that's on the positive side. The negative side is we're going to do two inversions, actually. Fascinating inversions. Let's go for the following. I want to actually just skip the whole next column because it's just complex stuff, which I think it sort of takes our mind off the central focus here. I want to start on the left hand column over here, where it says the very bottom paragraph. It says Veloy Rak. He says the following: Veloy Rak me'av lebein. This is the case of example. Afilu la'achar kamadoros. This works intergenerationally for many many generations. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Omar Rav Shmuel, so New Testament Aleph, Omar Shmuel Nachmeni Omar Rav Yochanan, Rav Yonah's son, Ashrei Ha'ish Asher Lo'alach B'tzas R'shoim. That's the first pasuk in all of Tehillim. Right? So we say, the Gemara is about to cut it up into a darsh in each part of the pasuk. So Ashrei Ha'ish Asher Lo'alach B'tzas R'shoim, who's the person who did not walk in the advice or the counsel of evil? Who's that referring to? It's the Avraham Avinu. Sh'lo'alach B'tzas Anshei Dor Ha'palaga, Sh'r'shoim Ha'yu. You know, Avraham Avinu actually lived at the same time as Dor HaPalaga. This is fascinating because, you know, when we read Parshas Noach, we kind of divorce ourselves from Parshas Lech Lecha. And when we read Parshas Lech Lecha, we think of it independently. But there's a really, 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 really worthwhile book if you're going to get a chance. It's in Judaica Plus. It's called Midor Lador. It's only got one page, but the page is as long as this room. You ever seen this? It unfolds all the way. It's the most remarkable book. It's written by a person called Ephraim Waxman. I don't believe it's Rav Ephraim Waxman. I think it might be a different Ephraim Waxman. But what he does is unbelievable. What he basically does is each page is divided into a century. So it's equally it's to scale, right? So there's lines for every 10 years, every year, and it maps out world events, Jewish events, Shemitah cycles, everything from start of creation till 2010, I think it was. You know, whatever it is. Unbelievable.
And it unfolds like an accordion.
You're right, it goes like, you can lay out the entire book across the room. Fascinating.
It's a great book, and it's very helpful.
Why? Because sometimes you get to see things you didn't notice. You're like, oh, wait a second. You know, it wasn't so long for Noach to see people who speak to Enosh. You know, people like second generation of Adam. You know, you see who got to meet each other. You didn't realize Avraham Avinu lived at the time of the Dor HaPalaga. He lived at the time of the generation of dispersion, which means that not only was Avraham Avinu great in his own right, but he was great also because he lived in a bad neighborhood, right? And he managed to come out. All right. That's the first thing. Then the Gemara goes on to say, Shne'emar, it says, Havona nivne lo no'ir. They said, let's make a city. Uvederech chata'im lo amad. And he didn't stand in the way of the sinners. Shelo amad ba'amidas Sodom shechata'im ahoyu. He didn't stand around the people of Sodom who were sinners. Shne'emar avan shesodom chata'im chata'im la'ashem. So he didn't follow that either. So ma'od. Uvamoshim le'isim lo yashav. No, page thing, just on the other side. He says, it says, Shalay Yoshav, Moshev, Anshe, Aplishtim, Shel, Mibnei, Sheletzon, Sheletzon, Emoyu. He didn't spend time with the Philistines, and they're real scoffers. They just don't take anything seriously. How do we know that they don't take things seriously? Shenema, Raihi, Kato, Katuv, Libom, Vayomru, Kir, Leshimshon, Visacheglanu. They said, like, yeah, ha 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 ha. Now that we have this blinded, you know, Samson, let's bring him out and we'll, like, you know, let him play for us. You know, we'll tell him to, you know, put the tail on the donkey. We'll play games with him because now he can't see, and like, let's laugh at him. So Avraham Avinu was not influenced by those people. Wait a second. Anachronism here, folks. What? This doesn't work, right? Why?
2,000 years later.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're talking about. A thousand years later, right? Centuries later was when Shimshon happened. Avraham Avinu wasn't influenced by what's going to happen in the future. Well, he wasn't living there. I understand the Dara Flog and Anshe Stom. Those were his neighbors. They're the places he grew up in. Shimshon was very far away from him. He says the following, He says, but what you see from this Gemara is there must have been something that they were then, which yielded a nation which didn't really take things seriously. You know, they liked entertainment all the time. They liked to, you know, make fun of people at other people's expense and use people as entertainment. Well, if that's what they're doing then, it's be sure as anything else that that's what they were doing earlier on. It must have existed in some form or fashion. So what Chazal is saying is, I read Nach, I see who his neighbors were, I see what they're doing in the future, I understand what they must have been doing then. What are you doing over here? What he's doing is reversing the process in the same way. If Avraham Avinu can be Zoicha to, let's say, you know, the Be'er and the Anan and the Man because of something he does, and that seed allows itself to expand in the future, you can do the opposite of the bad as well. If I see something bad, it must be that tracing back, there is a kernel, that seed. Doesn't mean it had to have happened, but it's likely that there must have been something which existed beforehand. You know, sometimes when you meet somebody and you have a long, long, long relationship, and Rachman and so on, let's say it's a bad relationship. Let's say that person's in an abusive relationship, and they look back, you know. I've spoken when you speak to like places like Shalom Task Force as an example, I always say that the other person, the victim, always knows there was something strange from day one. They ignore those signs. They were very subtle signs, and they just, you know, they thought something wasn't, you know, whatever. They ignored it, but it was there. It just sometimes, and it doesn't always mean that those signs turn into bad things, but the people are aware of these things. What he's saying is the Plishtim, same kind of thing, right? It was intergenerational. It was years later. But nonetheless, the same thing exists. So he gives another example. That's one example for the bad. Another example, he says, by the Ramban. The Ramban says in Parashas Nitzavim, it says, V'advarim v'varim lehedi b'perish Ramban ala kosov, penyesh bochem shoresh parer rash valano. Hashem says, Israel, I'm just telling you about all these curses, right? If there's anybody here who's not listening, they're thinking to themselves with their fingers crossed behind their backs, yeah, right, Moses, you tell us what you think, we're going to go into the land of Israel and buy our real estate. What does that mean? Kozor Ramban. Penyesh bochem shoresh ra sheyifre v'yishage b'yomim ha'abayim yotzi pirachim ra'im v'yatzmiach merurus. I'm not saying there's bad people now. I'm saying there's just maybe a kernel of lack of respect right now. And you don't really, you're not going to say anything, but somewhere in the back of your head you're thinking, Moshe Rabbeinu, this is all very nice, right? But you're not just doing anything. But that will translate itself generation after generation till there's a rotten apple in this barrel. The Ramban says that whatever parents do, that's going to turn into their children. I remember like when I was a long, long time ago, not in this country, I remember sitting around a table and there was a kid who was in like junior high and there was a particular Rebbe at the time in the school who like put together a school choir. Very nice thing. And you know, it certainly was not very professional. And I went to the performance and everything, like that was fine. But I remember like the dad was sitting around the table and he was like mocking this particular Rebbe, like, you know, like the way he would sing and so on and so forth. And I remember thinking at the time, like, you know, like, it's not a good thing to mock teachers. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because they're sometimes the only hope our kids have, especially in adolescent years, you know? And like, lo and behold, you know, 5-10 years later, he's like, I don't understand my kid. He's not inspired by anything. He's not like, now it's not because he caused that, you know? It's not that he caused that, but like, you got to be very careful. Like, your attitude to like, what teachers or rebbes look like, you're telling your children that. Like, how do you expect that to like, shift when you want it to be all right, you know? Anyway, so what he's saying is that's what the Ramban is saying over here. Is be very careful about the seeds we plant because they germinate later. Now, he goes into a historical exploration of this. And I'm sorry that it's negative because he's done a lot of the positive. He gives a negative because this is a very famous negative that he explores. And to me, it's fascinating on so many accounts. So he goes into a famous character at the times of the Mishnah. And yeah, let's explore him for a moment. This is going to take us to the next little section. He says, Issa, the Gemara b'Chagiga. The Gemara tells us in Chagiga, Tana Rabbanu Maisa b'Acher, Shoye Roichev al Sus b'Shabbos. So there's a person by the name of Acher, well, he actually had another name, which was Elisha ben Avuya. He was the Rebbe of Rebbe Meir. He was the Rebbe of Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir was the redactor of the Mishnah. Just means that before Rebbe Yehuda put all the Mishnahs together, if you have a stump Mishnah, you have a Mishnah without an author, we attribute it to Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir's Rebbe was a person by the name of Elisha ben Avuya. He was called Acher because he dropped his belief in God at some point in time. He went over the precipice. He still Rebbe Meir still learned with him. So Acher is riding a horse on Shabbos, right? So he's violating Shabbos explicitly. And Rebbe Meir is following him to still learn Torah from him because he's one of the most brilliant minds of the generation. Can you imagine this experience? Right? Amalei afata chozabach. So Rabbi Meir at a ripe moment, at a ripe window, said to him, he says, Rabbi, do teshuva, right? Amalei v'loi kvar amarti lecha kvar shamati me'acharei apargod shuvu banim shovivim chutz me'acher. I went into the celestial worlds, and I heard a voice from the other side of the dividing curtain that said that everybody in the world can do teshuva except for Acher. So I have it written in stone for me that there's no way back. By the way, just as a side point here, just fascinating, like footnote. Rav Soloveitchik writes, in I believe it's Lachamesh Drashas. He has a section where he talks about this, and he says that the mistake that Acher made was he said, yes, the character Acher has no way back, but Elisha ben Avuya does. But he had self-identified with Acher to the point that he couldn't escape the personality he had created for himself. That's a scary thought. Meaning, sometimes we can't release the identity we've adopted to be able to fix ourselves. And therefore we have to spend our life in defense. That's a very, very terrifying thought. But no, that's not what he's pointing out, yeah? But this story about Elisha ben Avuya. So where did this come from? Where Tosus calls Beshema Yerushalmi. So the Tosus quotes Yerushalmi right on that Gemara there. Lama ira loikach. What was the, how could somebody so brilliant fall so low? Amaloi, am acher lebi Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Akiva rabcho loikach darashas apostle. Tov achris dovem ireshisai. Surely Rebbe Akiva, your Rebbe of Rebbe Meir, who said, one of the Rebbe's Rebbe Meir, said that we learned that a good thing at the end is from its beginnings. It can only be good if it comes from a good beginning. Okay, if you're hearing the nature nurture thing, yeah, what does that mean? He mean, this story happened to me. Avuya Avi Migdola Yerushalayim. My father Avuya was one of the greats of Jerusalem. V'yom Shabbat leMohali at the day of my circumcision. Korah l'kol Gedola Yerushalayim v'ashivim v'vayzechot. So he invited all the respectables and notables of Yerushalayim. They were all coming into one house. So as the meal goes on, they're not talking about the World Series. They're talking about Divrei Torah. And what happens is Yarda Esh min haShemayim v'kifa osam, and a sphere of fire, spiritual energy, surrounds them to such a degree that it's actually tangible, right? That it can be seen that there's a spiritual orb of energy around them as they're learning. That's the that are generating. Amar lun avoya avuya aba gavrin ma gavrin ma 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 bosam lisroif beisir. I didn't invite you to burn down my house. So Amr Lai, Chas Hashanah Ela, Yoshun Ha, you know, Vachozun Al Dibre Torah, Mitara and Levinivim and Levin Lakhsuvim, Vayumada Hadvarim Smechim, Kinesinosim and Sinai. The experience of talking about the Torah was like it was going through from Sinai. By the way, you know something interesting? They weren't learning anything fancy, they were learning Tanakh, right? That's what generated the fire. Okay, so it was just the power of experiencing the Tanakh itself. Loi be'eshnitnu was not given in fire. Amar hoyel v'kach koicha shel Torah. So Avuya says, now that is impressive. If that's what Torah can do, im yiskayim haben azeh, if my son will live. By the way, in those days, wasn't a given. Natural infancy mortality rates. You know, if my child will survive, l'Torah ani mafrishoy, I'm going to make him sure he's a Talmid Chacham. L'fi sheloi oishe sheloi hoysa kavanos l'shem shomayim, l'fi rach lo niskayim ubi. He says, why was it that my father schooled me in Torah? What was the reason, the starting reason, that integral moment at the very beginning? What was the reason he did this all for me? Because he wanted fire, he wanted the power, he wanted to by the way, that's not a bad thing, right? That's not a bad thing. But it wasn't because he wanted to come close to Hashem, he saw that this child is made for this, because that wasn't what he was saying. He was saying, wow, that's very powerful. I hope my son is very powerful. So what is Elisha ben Avuya really saying? Is my whole education system was built on somewhat of a faulty foundation. It was all shelo lishma. It was all because of an impressive experience my father had, not because of the real deal. So he's saying, I started off wrong. That's what Avuya, that's very depressing, right? So yeah.
I mean, somebody of that caliber, you would think they would have the ability to, you know, once they recognize that, to change that, to work
on
that.
Exactly. Let's go back to the seed and how you water that seed. That might be a seed. Not all seeds need to be watered, right? Okay, and by the way, the Gemara explains that Torah Achristov and Reish Yisoy is, there's a different way of reading that passage. But yeah, he was locking himself into a predetermined package, right? What he's saying is, I'm like this curse of my parents, or because of a life circumstance. That's what you say. I'm locked into a nature. That's the terrifying thing about this. But the Gemara gives other reasons. That's what Racham Shlomo points out. The Gemara says, Acher Mai, well, how did he get there? Rashi says, how did this happen? He says, Zomar Yuvani Loi Posak Mipume. He used to sing Greek songs, right? He was involved in Greek culture. He had he was reading lots of Greek philosophers, right? And there was lots of questions that were happening in his head. Right, in Gemara Kedushin, the Gemara Kedushin says on Lama Tesla Beis, Amr al Acher Lishna de Chutzpis Maturgaman Hoya Hachazo, Davagorir Le Devar Acher, Amr Pe, Shehipig Margolios, the Elachlech Offer, Nafak Fachata. That what happened was, he witnessed the death of Chutzpis Maturgaman. Chutzpis Maturgaman was one of the great sages. He was one of the 10 martyrs that we talk about in Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. And how did he die? He was killed by the Romans and he had his tongue sliced out and thrown onto the garbage heap. Why did they do that? Because he was one of the greatest proliferators of Torah. He stood on the podium and he lectured Torah lectures. And they said to him, if you carry on lecturing publicly under the Hadrianic persecutions in the 120s to 130s, common era, they said, we're going to kill you. He carried on. He said, I can't stop doing it. And they did that. They killed him. He says, he was walking down the road and he saw the tongue of Chutzis HaMaturgamon lying on the trash heap. And he says, how could it be a tongue which expressed so much Torah should be lying? Where's the schar for that? That experience, you know, burnt him so much. In fact, there's another Gemara, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, he doesn't mention here. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says the very last daf is that he saw there was a boy who was told by his father to go up and climb up the ladder and chase away the mother bird, and the boy goes and chases the mother bird and falls down the way back down and dies. And those are the two mitzvahs of the Torah says, that you're going to get long life, the listening to one's parent, and the for chasing mother bird. And he said, lays din v'lays dayon, there's no judge, there's no justice. And it was out of the window. So the Gemara gives us numerous reasons why he was sort of thrown from his experience. There are many causations in his life. So what he's saying is that ultimately there were many things, there were many aspects we'll call of the nurture. There were parts of his life which contributed to his devolution, but there was a root at the base, which made him susceptible to those experiences. But let's go back to his mashal at the beginning. If you only have the seed and you don't have the water or the ground, you don't get a tree. If I have lots of water and I have lots of sunshine, but I don't have a seed, ain't nothing growing, right? You need to have both that coalesce. Acher was unfortunate in the sense that he felt that he was always destined for. You mean like when he looked back at his life, he says, "I was always dented from the beginning," without the realization that those experiences that he had, he could have made decisions about, but he ultimately filtered them through that determinism of where the seed was coming from, and that was the tragedy of Acher. And we all have these moments in life where we say, well, you know, that's how I am. I can't change because I'm just this person. I feel guilty that I'm this person, but that's who I am. That's what he says. Now I want to just skip for just the last point over here. He also points out that, you know, even with Acher, this whole thing is very, very subtle. Meaning like this is, you know, like, is it a bad thing? Like, you know, you want to make your son learn a lot of Torah because, like, look what Talmidei Chacham look like and what they can do. That's amazing. I mean, like, halavai, you know, we do lots of things shelo lishma. When you're on a great level, you know, subtle differences make big changes later on in life, right? You know, 1 degree shift over here, you know, turns into quite a distance when it goes down the line of the protractor. But he gives a last, and perhaps we'll close with this in the future. Going back to the first page, which is the last page. He says, "V'Yaakov Avinu Olav Hashalom Bikesh." Yaakov Avinu says at the end of the Torah, at the end of Vayechi, he says, "Because b'sodom al tavo nafshi uviko b'keilom al techad kvodi." So he is talking about, this is the, so to speak, blessing he gives Levi and Shimon and Levi, and he says, "I don't want to be involved in their machinations and what they do," right? He's referring to what they did with Shechem, right? They were pretty violently destroyed the city of Shechem. I don't want to be involved in those kind of things. But he goes further and he says like this. He says the Medrash says Shelo Yizacher Shmoi b'Maaseh Zimri, that he did not want his name to be related or mentioned when it came to the Zimri episode later on. V'Ein Ksiv Shom Elo Nasi Beisav LeShimoni, that when Zimri, who goes and has this public affair with this woman called Cosby from Midian, he is a tribe from Shimon, he's not from Yaakov. Korach is given 3 generations, but not 4 generations back in terms of his genealogy. Why? Because Yaakov requested, I don't want to be involved in their, what they do in the future. Ben Yaakov. So you say, okay, so Yaakov just doesn't want association. When the newspaper article hits the front page of the local newspapers, he doesn't want to be part of that, right? He doesn't want to do that. But he says it's much more than that. He says, "Ach le'or ha'amur," according to what we just said, "Yesh kan kavana amuka yoser, shekishera Yaakov avinu." When he saw the future generation sinning, he says, "I hope when I look inside of myself, I didn't plant that seed. I hope there's no way that imperfection can be traced back to something in my DNA." And that's why his name wasn't mentioned. It wasn't just simply about publicity. So Mikan Nilmod, he says, yeah, we can learn. Have to be very careful about the way we, you know, the subtleties in the way we act. You say, nah, I'm just thinking, I'm just talking. You know, like, did I cause any damage? Can I be sued? Right? No. He says, Sharei, Gam Netia Kala L'Ra B'Koycho L'Tzmiach Peros Ra'im U'Marim Ad Mo'od. Even thoughts have the ability, somewhere down the line, whether it be years, whether it be actions, whether it be to turn into things. And he says, of course, if a person has positive thoughts, even thoughts ultimately turn into incredible expressions. Just a few things just to think about just on this is that one of the, you know, transformational books that I read was 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. One of the reasons why it's an impressive book is because It doesn't blame everybody for your ills in life. You know, a lot of these books talk about, you know, how everybody else is to blame for our lives. And he goes on, basically talks about, he has a chapter which is called Be Proactive, which is the first of the habits. And he basically says the following. He says that, just to quote this, the reflection of the current social paradigm tells us that we are largely determined by conditioning and conditions. While we have acknowledged the tremendous power of conditioning in our lives, to say that we are determined by it, that we have no control over that influence, creates quite a different map. And he goes on to say there's genetic determinism, which is like the way I was born, what the traits my parents gave me, the DNA, which may be my proclivity even towards certain like, you know, moods or characteristics. Psychic determinism, it tells you what your parents did to you, your upbringing, your childhood experience essentially laid out your personal tendencies. And environmental determinism, basically your boss, what is your boss, your spouse, your bratty teenager, your economic environment is responsible for your situation, meaning environment. And what he points out is that between stimulus and response exists a space. In that space is our choice. And I think what Racham Shulevitz is saying over here is that we need to be careful at all stages. First of all, the seeds we create and the way we think. But also, even if there was a seed that we've inherited, it doesn't mean we have to water it. We're not stuck in that rut necessarily. We create the seeds for future, but we've inherited some seeds. But some seeds we should water, some seeds we shouldn't water. We're not stuck by what was given to us necessarily in that perspective. One of the beautiful ways I've heard this expressed, and just to close with this, is when David HaMelech loses his son, terrible, terrible thing, his son Avshalom is trying to kill him, right? That's the third Mizmor in Tehillim. He's running away from Avshalom Benoi. His son's trying to kill him, and it's this love-hate relationship. On the one hand, he tells Yoav, his general, don't kill him, because he doesn't want him to die, but Avshalom's trying to kill him. He rapes his wives. I mean, it's a terrible thing. He goes into exile from his own son. A terrible thing. So, and Yoav does kill him. And when he hears that his son dies, he cries out, Avshalom, Beni, Beni, Avshalom, Avshalom, Beni. It's just a crazy pasuk. He keeps repeating, and you can imagine him crying and crying and crying as he says Avshalom's name. You can visit his kever. If you go to the Kotel, you go look down to Harazesim. Yad Avshalom, where Avshalom is buried, is right there in the valley. It's like, well, there's a large monument where Avshalom is buried. Fascinating, really worthwhile to visit. So he cries out, and the Medrash says, Rashi quotes the Medrash, and he cries out Avshalom Bani 7 times. He says, Bani Avshalom, Bani, Bani, Bani Avshalom. He says the word 7 times to extract him from the 7 Madure Gehenim, to extract him from the 7 levels of, so to speak, the punishment for what he did to his father. Now, generally speaking, Judaism does not believe in other people expatriating, you know, for you from your sins, right? You don't go into a closet and tell somebody that you know what you did, and then you're fine because somebody died for you. That doesn't work like that. So David HaMelech, you know, no matter how many times Bani Bani Bani, it's not going to help his son, right? So a friend and a chavrus, his name is Rav Nachum Rosenbaum, says such a shocking thing. He says no. He realizes, if you go into the genealogy, it's worthwhile looking at the family structure. Avshalom is not his first son. It's not from his first wife. It goes first as Amnon, who Avshalom kills, is the first son. He's the prince heir. And in fact, Avshalom, I believe, is from the fourth wife. Then Shlomo sort of takes the place of Avshalom. In a certain sense, David HaMelech always rejected Avshalom. He never saw him as the crown prince. He never gave him that space. And even when Avshalom comes to apologize to him, he doesn't recognize Avshalom. He disassociates with Avshalom. What David HaMelech was saying at the end of his life is that my son led a terrible life. But you know what? He's my son. I did that to him to a certain degree. There was things I own in that relationship. I'm not taking him out of his Gehinnom. I'm taking him out of the parts, the seeds I planted in him, which I take responsibility for him. Most people are very good at blaming. What David HaMelech was saying is I own something in what just happened here. That's a very shocking ability to self-analysis, which is very heavy. But at the same time, it puts into more clear definition what Rav Shneur is saying. So just food for thought. The nature, the nurture, both needed together. And the incredible responsibility that we bear for this.